Let me just welcome you here. I have got to know you and your brother and the family or whatever throughout my time here in Northwest Indiana. You're probably one of the most region-connected people there could be. Tell me about it, what it's like to grow up and be a region guy.
Oh, man. You know, I think when you're here, there's always that when you're growing up, right? You're like, okay, I can't wait to get out of here. Or, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to Chicago. And, you know, I went to school down in Bloomington, and then having moved up to Chicago, it was like, you know, I'm going to be a Chicago guy. I can't wait to be a Chicago guy. Lived up in Chicago for a couple of years. And then around that time was actually when Tom started to want to run. Well, he decided to run for office for mayor. So I was actually living in Chicago and coming back out here to help with Tom's campaign. And it was just one of those things where as much fun as I was having in Chicago, it was just, you know, you have your family here, you have your friends here. And I really did love Northwest Indiana and do love Northwest Indiana. So it was just a natural fit to, you know, end up moving back here. And, you know, you're still around family and friends. And, you know, it just became a comfort level where, you know, I think you learn, you know, when you get good at something, you know, that's when you really enjoy it,
yep.
You know. So it's like the more I got to know, like, you know, I was always great in Lake County when I was 16 years old. We just do nothing but drive around Lake County. So, you know, it was just a natural fit to get into real estate, I feel like, you know.
You knew all those places.
I knew all the places anyway. Yeah. Yeah. When you're scouting for girls, when you're 16, 17 years old, now you know the back roads and know the neighborhoods. And yeah, I was doing mortgage brokering and went to get my real estate license because I just wanted to meet realtors getting in the business.
Okay.
So realized how much I hated doing mortgages shortly thereafter. And then shortly after that, I realized how much I hated doing residential parts. So myself and another gentleman started up a commercial division within his franchise, and then just always had that inkling, I feel like, to get into just entrepreneurial with my dad and, you know, his background, and having, you know, he owned numerous businesses throughout Northwest Indiana besides being obvious mayor of Hammond for a while. So I don't know, you just, you know, I always thought I was gonna live in Chicago and be a Chicago guy, but you know you have your family and friends, it's just very comfortable out here. So
well, I was a Chicago guy, and I definitely know what it's like to move to Northwest Indiana, and just, you know, in my case, and just embrace the heck out of it.
Yeah,
you got lower taxes, better quality of life, nicer way of living, much less crowded, much less stressful. You could, you know, the schools are great.
Yeah.
Everything about it is.
And you can still go to Chicago.
Yeah, and you can still go to Chicago anytime you want.
Yeah, anytime you want. It's nice, quick, easy. I'm still up in Chicago quite a bit. So,
what is the entrepreneurial spark that you wanted to satisfy? It sounded like you could have gone along in that kind, in your kind of a career, mm-hmm. working for somebody else, but there was something that you just said, no, I want to control my own destiny.
Yeah, I don't think I'm employable by anyone else.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I use for me. Right? It's like, yeah. I know I would never hire me.
Yeah, so that's what I say to this day.
Unless I keep myself employed,
uh-huh.
I'm not going to have a job.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, I don't feel like I followed direction very well with other people. I always had a mindset of, okay, this is how I envision things. This is how I can work. And I don't feel like I ever fit in that corporate mindset where I would be good at, you know, having a certain hierarchy above me to listen. And, you know, half those guys, you know, I don't want to say half because it probably is more than half sometimes. You know, they're just career guys, career corporate guys that have got up there for nothing better than they've just been there long enough. So I just never fit that corporate mindset, I don't feel like. And I, you know, I always like to grow something from the beginning. You know, I just, you know, that the whole experience of my first job, you know, my first real job I call it when I got into real estate was helping create a commercial division. So it was like, oh, this is, you know, there was nothing there. We helped grow this commercial division. It was, you know, we were starting to get traction. And, you know, then I had the opportunity to go work.
You were building something.
Yeah, building something. It's building something. It's, you know, doing things the way you envision, how you want to do it. And it was a quality of life thing, too. You know, for as much as, you know, I liked making money, I also, you know, enjoyed having fun with family and friends. And, you know, it was always a work-life balance for me, too. So
how have you grown you speak a lot about growth. How have you grown through having to do all that?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question.
It's not just Aaron.
You're doing it right now, right?
Aaron and somebody else.
Yeah,
you got a whole team up
there. Yeah, and you've done the same thing. I think it's just a mindset of like, okay, how can the company actually be a company versus like Aaron McDermott's brokerage firm? It's like, okay, well, you have to put certain people in places and you have to give up control of certain things. You have to, you know, stop, you know, you have to look at the big picture. It's like, okay, how is this going to survive after me? You know, when I do retire, you know, is the company gone or do I want to see it, you know, continue on through, you know, generationally or, you know, to my other partners, you know? So you have to set up things in that way and just be able to give up control too. So that's definitely a tough thing to do is to...
I'm great at it, by the way.
Right?
Like,
I'm
know
sure.
No one here would
really... I see I help Chris be lesser, I noticed on the wall. I don't know, that's...
They were setting up for the shoot and Jenny was actually just showing from a framing standpoint, like how to make sure the guest is the priority and not so much on Chris. And
oh, okay.
We have sort of a running rivalry where she's constantly trying to knock me out of the business. And
I can see that.
Really,
you know?
Push me on. And I think it's probably evident to everybody.
I thought she was actually going to do the podcast. So I'm surprised you're
really?
Even here.
Yeah. No, I started crying.
Yeah, right.
Like,
I can't leave.
Now you're replacing. Yeah. We were out at WNDU yesterday in South Bend and we got a tour of the studio and got to hang out or whatever, and seeing her up on set, you know, in front of a TV set, I'm like, I lost her. Like, she's gone.
Bill.
But yeah, so she would like to help me be lesser.
Yeah.
Overall.
But, you know, that's, hey, how can you...
I love it.
Yeah, right. I know. You have to get to that mindset too, right? So, like, how is the company... Are you going to be 80 years old doing this?
Yeah.
You know, like, am I going to be able to do the same things I can do and be ahead of the curve and bring these certain, like, people in, do the technologies and do the things that help grow the company when I'm halfway checked out because I'm in, you know, like Tahoe for 2 months out of the year or, you know, wherever else I plan on wanting to try to get to. So you can't have a company continuing on if you don't have the mindset of, like, eventually I want to be here, you know, or eventually I want to spend less time here or I want my kid to get in the business or something like that. So it's giving up control and being comfortable with that control or lack thereof.
what kind of people allow you to give them that authority? Because it's not easy.
It's definitely not easy. Yeah. There's a great book I read about this Admiral Captain. My brother will kill me for not knowing that exactly, but it's called It's Your Ship, and it was just a great book. It was like, you know, just having the faith in the people that you hire. You know, I think there's a gut when you hire somebody. Like, you know, there's a certain level of trust you have to have. You know,
yeah.
You brought this person in for a reason. You have this gut feeling about them. Like, okay, and I always say it's your ship. Like, I don't need to know, like, every single thing. I trust that you're going to handle this the way that you would think I would want this handled. So, you know, it's just having the faith in the people that you hire, and, you know, hopefully you made that right decision, and, you know, you brought in the person that's going to execute your vision of what you think would be the right thing to do.
Well, I know I'm a learning in process person.
Oh, yeah.
As it's really hard to give up control because you know exactly how you want it to get done.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hire strong enough people that basically continue to push you out of the way, I think it could be a great balance, because you want the vision of what you have. You don't want it to be any different.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to necessarily have to be the one that it depends on for every single step.
And you know, it's not perfect. It's obviously never going to be perfect. It's never going to be exactly how you thought it would be. But, you know, you have to accept that too. You know, it's like, okay, things aren't going to work out perfectly. And they probably wouldn't have worked out perfectly if you were doing it either. But maybe it gives you an excuse to say, well, you should have did this way. You're like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
It's like the, you know, Monday morning quarterback.
As you were growing up, what taught you that edge, that competition?
It was a lot of sports. It's a lot of parenting. You know, my dad was always hard on us, you know, just making sure that, you know, we got good grades. We were going to class and doing, you know, studying and whatnot. And then, you know, I love sports. It's like, you know, I was, you know, in high school, I was in a number of different sports. And, you know, I just love watching sports. So I think it's that competitiveness that, you know, it kind of drive, you know, not kind of, it definitely drives you, you know, it's, you got to have that inner drive too. But, you know, I think, I feel like you know, I always have that mentality, like half the people don't even know I'm competing with them.
Yeah.
But I'm competing with them in every little thing, whether it's I'm driving down the road or whether I'm going after a listing, whether it's in guys in my own office. You know, it's like there's an inner competitiveness that you have to have within yourself to be able to like say, okay, I got to get this done better, you know, or I got to win this assignment.
Yeah.
You know, I got to make sure I do all the right things to get it done. So I don't know. I don't know if that was inherited or if it's just, you know, and it's not just my family, right? You know, I've got clients that I've grown around, like some just incredible entrepreneurs when I'm, you know, first in this business, just to be around and watch how they grew from, you know, that. And that's probably one of the best things is, you know, when I got in this business to watch, you know, a guy that grew from one unit to, you know, 20 units, you know, of a certain restaurant, or watch this small business become 20 years later, you know, they come back to me, they're multi-millionaires, or, you know, even watch the guys that were successful sell out and, you know, be able to retire at a young age. And it's just, you know, trying to pick up on everyone, you know, it's adapting and learning, like, oh man, that's a great way to handle business, and to be able to like relay that to other businesses. It's like, okay, well, I've learned all this stuff.
Learn?
Yeah, it's always learning. You're always learning.
It's like a real world MBA that you can have, but you have to actually be paying attention. And I look at it as every person we're interviewing or every person I get to meet, you're just like a sponge.
Yeah.
Like, what can I learn from that particular person? And it doesn't mean whatever I'm going to learn from you says, oh my gosh, I want to be exactly like you. No, I see this, that, and the other thing. So if I could learn that from you, and if I could learn these three things from that guy, and these two things from that woman, and these two other things from that other lady, you could actually be really, really smart by just paying attention.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, if only I can execute it that way too.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, oh.
I have the best desire for knowledge, the ability to ingest that and actually change how you behave. Is, that's a challenge.
Well, that's how you get the right people in place, right? You know, you get the right people that help you execute that vision or say, hey, this is how they're doing it. How can we morph that into our business? And that's like, you know, sometimes it's how big do you want to grow? You know, it's like, how big can you grow and how big are you, how much are you willing to sacrifice? Because it is a sacrifice, obviously. You know, there's days away from family, there's hours, you know, missing practices or missing games, you know, are you willing to sacrifice? And that's where, you know, that's where hopefully the next generation or my, you know, next partners are willing to go. Because it's like, okay, there's a lot of opportunity out. You know, I think we've created a great model in our company. It's, you know, how much farther can it go? You know, because I've got a, you know, I've got a vision that I know we can go. It's, you know, who's going to take the reins and go to the next office, or the next market, or, you know, meanwhile,
you don't want to run up the next hill and then turn around and you're like, wait, are you guys coming?
Yeah, yeah, because it's a far, it's a big
exactly.
hill.
Exactly.
I don't know if I didn't bring any water.
Yeah, and I thought somebody would be bringing water.
I'm 45 years old. I can't climb the mountain like I was when I was 30.
And I'm 58, so I definitely know what you're thinking about. Who's made an impact on you?
Oh man, I don't know if I want to get too specific, but there's definitely
what kinds of people have made.
Yeah, I think it's always a small business guy. You know, it's always because that's, you know, we deal with some big corporate, you know, users. We've dealt with Fortune 500 companies, but it's mostly been, you know, had the luxury of being around franchisees or even, you know, just a small business owners. So
I've had somebody that's putting their nuts on the line.
Yeah.
And if this succeeds, they're going to do well. And if it doesn't, they're going to do really poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. They really put like, you know, I don't know, there's a certain guy that started a gym. I don't know how much I want to put out there.
But, yeah.
He was the one that actually helped start up my business. And I remember this story. He told me, he's like, you know, he was a college dropout, dropped out of college, and he wanted to open up his first gym, and his dad refinanced his house to give him money to start up this gym. And he's like, listen, I was literally living at the gym some nights because I didn't want to come home, and my dad, he would never say anything, but he would look at me like, why are you home so early?
Yeah.
So he would literally live at the gym just to make sure it succeeded. And I, you know, that, you know, I think when I met him, he had maybe three quick service restaurants, well, not quick service, full service restaurants at the time. He ended up building it up to around seven restaurants, sold them off to corporate. He's developing high rises in Indianapolis now. And, you know, he really helped me get started in my business. And, you know, he's just, you know, a really a great friend and a great client, and I just haven't, and you know, that's one example. And then another one is one of my current partners that helped me buy my first property with him. You know, he allowed me to bring in my commission on the first deal. I had a vision on a property we found, and just for him to be able to like have the faith in me. You know, I was, you know, I don't know how I was old, how old I was. I can tell you, I was early on in with Latitude, so it was probably 12 years ago. Helped me buy my, you know, first piece of real estate, and he's been my partner every single deal since then.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, I see the checks he gets every month, and he knows I see the checks every month, so I know he's happy at how successful we've been and some of the purchases that we made.
But ultimately, he had faith in you.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he had to extend some risk, some faith, some. You know, I got confidence in him. You mentioned before, it's a gut feel. Like, I got a gut feel about this guy. Like, I think he's going to do well.
And to the point about the first guy, I, you know, just inner, you know, taking that in and being like, okay, well, he made that sacrifice in me. I'm going to bust my ass. I'm not going to like fail. Like, there's no way I'm going to give up like that. And that was one thing, and probably still is, about me, is that there is no, like, there's, I just don't have, there's no way I'm going to fail. Like, I will, there is no way I'm giving up. Yeah. You know, I'm going to die doing
your own
this.
Hand
before
you're going to start.
For sure. Yeah. I will make sure everyone else is paid, and I'll go, you know, go under before I let something happen. So
how do you hire a bunch of, not young, but younger developing professionals, and you grow them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you teach that old school mentality?
I think it's
without overwhelming.
Yeah, no, I just think you try to lead by example. I still try to be the first one and last one to leave every day. So even I think you lead by example, and I've got the right, you know, managers, and they know how I want things done. They know how you should treat your client, and how you should, you know, it's easy in our business to stick a sign in front and then like cross your fingers.
Yeah.
It's harder to make the phone call to, like, you know, not just send out the email, but to make the phone call to say, hey, we've got a spot. Is this right for you? So to always push to say, hey, if you're going to do it, you got to be different, you know, because anybody in this business could stick a sign out front and then hope everyone does the same thing for the most part. You know, we have all the right systems.
Plant the sign and pray.
Put on the databases. Anybody can do that. It's, you know, how do you take it to the next level? How are you active in the community? How are you going to the networking meetings? How are you promoting yourself? How are you writing articles that are relative to people? How are you dealing with that client when they call in? You know, are you helping them, you know, for the guy that comes in? You know, you need to be an advisor. You know, it's very salesman-y in a certain aspect, but you know, you have to be great at what you do. You have to be able to like help these people, because at the end of the day, I mean, this is somebody's financial career.
Yeah.
You know, this is somebody's financial savings that's on the line too. So take that incredibly seriously. You know, last thing you want to do is like, you know, whatever, our listing's overpriced, you're over going to pay, but I get a commission out of it, so I'm good. So I just, you know, those,
that,
you know,
doesn't,
those,
last.
No, that, no, that they're out of the business.
Makes your commission check this month.
They're out of the business, and that's, you know, great, because there's enough trash in our business anyway with, you know, people that don't know what they're doing. They try to do this. So,
well, I would guess there's also probably even more so on the retail side or residential side, but probably on the commercial side as well. When there's low or zero interest rates, everybody in the world's trying to get in on the transaction volume and saying, oh my God, I'm putting up my shingle. I'm a realtor.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And whether it's commercial or residential, I think some of that stuff will get cleaned out.
Yeah.
Where some challenging economic times will say, oh no, who's really supposed to be in this business?
Yeah. Because you're really doing and I get so frustrated every day, not, you know, maybe every week I see, you know, I get a report of every listing that hits the market. I see something, I'm like, oh my God, it's so overpriced. It's got no chance of selling it. Well, you know, it's great to think you've got that listing, but you know, you've got an owner here that's coming to you as a professional, and they're looking to you for advice. Like, what's this property worth? Well, you know, you get somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. They're like, oh, what do you think it's worth? You know, let's just say you got $1 million. Yeah, $1 million. Your property is worth $600,000. Well, what's that mortgage? You know, what's that mortgage payment this guy's paying? Because the property is going to sit. So you're paying debt service. odds are somebody's, if they're selling it, they've got an issue. You know, I always say I'm a problem fixer. I've got to come in, there's a problem, they either have to sell the business because they have to expand, they have to find a business. Well, this person's clearly got an issue they're coming to you with. So how are you doing the right thing for your client? If you've got an overpriced listing, it's not going to sell. You know what happens to that guy? He gets taken over by the bank. So now you got a foreclosure. Did you, you know, were you doing the right thing by your client, or were you doing the right thing because you got $1 million listing and you're looking at like the commissions that you're going to get paid? So that's where I get very frustrated with some of the, I call them resimercial people that get in our business and try to do the business. And you're, you know,
I've sold three houses, so now I want to get into commercial.
Right. You sold the house and now you're going to do the business. Well, the code of ethics in real estate says that, you know, you should be an expert and you should, it's kind of like stay in your lane. So you should do what you're kind of trained for. Well, people don't always abide by the code of ethics, and you can smell them right away. Oh yeah. Because the first, you'll take a phone call. The first question is, what's the price? Second question is, what's my commission? You're like, oh my God. Okay. We know what your priorities are. Yeah.
Zero. That's
zero. What I want. Yeah. Cause you're not going to sell it anyway. Yeah. So what's the matter? So,
tell me about the various divisions. It all part of a commercial orientation, but tell me about each of the segments.
Yeah, so we've got retail division, which handles consumer to business. So, you know, a restaurant, retailer, daycare, stuff like that. And then we've got the office division, professional office, medical office space. Then we've got industrial industrial, which handles, you know, the warehouse of the world, investment services, which handles investment property, like, fully leased strip malls, just any kind of property that has tenants that people are buying for investment purposes. And then our property management division, which basically acts as the landlord's representation, collecting rents, paying bills, getting contracts, bidding contracts and what. And
I've seen pictures online where your guys are out there shoveling snow off the roofs.
Such a great video.
I saw that.
We don't recommend that.
I would say you probably don't even want your guys doing it very much. But incredibly impressive, the lengths that they'll go to say, hey, listen, that this has to do with the success of listing this property. Like, we got to, or managing the property, like, we got to get up on the roof and fix it.
Yeah, you put the right people in the right places, and we've got a great property management. So I, you know, along with some of my investors, we own a number of buildings. Well, I don't even manage my properties. I, you know, pay my own group to manage our properties because I'm the last person you want managing a property. So I'm just, you know, too scared. I know where my strengths are, and they're in the right lane. They do everything, so it makes it really easy. I make the bigger decisions, but for the most part, you know, I don't even hear about light bulb being placed or a sidewalk that needs fixed or, you know, the snow plowing. You know, what were the 5 snow plowing bids? You know, what were the 5 landscaping bids that we have? And, you know, they're like, okay, well, you know, based off of this, I'll have some input. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm like, hey,
micromanaging stuff.
What's it matter?
Yeah, you know? And they're honestly, if they can put the time and intention to it, they're probably better at it than you are.
Oh, absolutely, they're much better at it.
What makes a Latitude person?
Oh man, a lot of it. So I know it's easy to say culture, but it really does have to be a culture fit for us. You know, I think if there was a common theme within our organization, it's charitable, willing to give back to the community. Self-drive, because, you know, I'm not going to be the one micromanaging you to push you, and ethical. You know, I think there's like three main things. Like those are three things. You know, you do what you're saying you're going to do. You do it, you know, in the right way. You know, you're willing to, you know, make some sacrifice in the community. We go out and do charitable things, and you know, you need to be able to like survive in this business, because, you know, a lot of it is whatever you put in. You know, this is the one business where whatever you put into this business, you're going to get back. So if you're not putting anything in this business, you're not going to make any money, and I don't even have to get rid of you, because you're just going to get out of the business yourself. Yeah. So it makes it easy, because
you're going to either feel uncomfortable or not make much money at it, and either one of those will lead to you doing what you need to do.
Yep. Makes it easy for not having to get rid of people for the most part. So
tell me about what is it that you love about the region? I'm coming from another area of the state, or I'm coming from out of state, and I say, you know, I'm thinking about moving here. I'm thinking about putting a headquarters or a manufacturing facility. What is it about the region I'm going to love?
You know, I think a lot of it's, you know, proximity to a major metropolitan area. I mean, for as much bad rep that Chicago gets, it's still not even, it's a world-class city. You know, it's one of the greatest cities.
It's not just a great national city, it's a great world, global city.
Yeah, so you've got the ability to, you still, believe it or not, you can pull a labor force from out of Chicago to work here. You still have the advantages of being close to Chicago. And then there's just, you know, the natural resources we have around here, you know, the lake, the dunes. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say the weather, but, you know, the weather's nice in the summer. We don't have to worry about natural, how about no natural disasters?
Yep, no natural disasters, no hurricanes.
No hurricanes.
We get a lot of snow, but so what? Snow,
it's that Midwest attitude, too. I think, you know, you got a lot of more down-to-earth people, I feel like, you know.
People there's are not like a little bit more scrappy.
Yeah, they're scrappy. You know, you've got, there's a lot of people that just drive, you know, we're a lot of like mill, you know, mill families and, you know, blue collar, hardworking, get in what you put in, you know, type of attitude. And, you know, it's a great melting pot too, right? You know, we've got just a great mix of demographics here too, which I love. You know, I just love that about it. I love the diversity of Northwest Indiana. I love, you know, the food, the culture. There's just so much to like. No, I don't know. And there's a lot of familiarity with Northwest Indiana. You know, I know it, and, you know, I know all the people around it. I think I like that part about it too. You know, it's being around friends and family that you've known for my whole life, 30 years, 40 years, you know, being around here. And they're still, you know, around. I've got friends from high school still. I live, you know, a block down from one of my best friends. So
really,
yeah.
That's so pretty cool.
Yeah, from high school. So I mean, middle school. So yeah.
We were touching earlier on a personal level. When you get around the McDermott Thanksgiving or Christmas table, my guess is there's a little banter that happens back and forth.
Oh,
Who takes the lead? Who goes for the jugular?
I don't know if there's a lead taker. It's just somebody plants the seed and then it's a one-up, you know? Yeah. I think
everybody fertilizes it.
Yeah, everyone fertilizes it. It can get pretty dark. And I think that's how it ends. You know, it's like, okay, who went there? Like, oh, I don't know where I can go from there without, you know, getting canceled in my own family, you know.
Without somebody turning the table over and walking out.
Yeah, you're like, oh my
gosh,
did he really just say that? And it's usually one of the wives that are like, okay,
enough.
Relax. Yeah.
Pass the stuff.
Yeah. But it was, you know, growing up with my dad, just always, you know, he was always like giving us crap, you know, just, and in a fun way, you know.
It
definitely did. Well, you know, to be frank, just living in a, you know, when I was, gosh, I think 4 years old, 5 years old, when my dad became mayor. So you really learn how to toughen up when you're reading news articles or, you know, I mean, I'd take phone calls at the house, like with, I mean, disgusting comments, like, and they don't care. Like, it's a kid, who cares, you know? Like, I'm just gonna blast whoever answers his phone. Like, somehow they got the mayor's home phone and they just, you know, have all that pent up anger. And I think you learn to not take things too seriously. You know, you just have thick skin and realize what's important and, you know, who's important in your life and, you know, where to, you know.
How much value to put on somebody's communication, you know, to say, you've got the free right to say what you're saying. I don't necessarily have to give it a lot of weight.
Yep, exactly.
I can look the other way.
Yeah, and now, like, oh my God, with social media, it's even, like, amplified more, you know, to, like, read the comments and, you know, I had not grown up in that family to, like, be a first-time mayor or first-time congressman or first-time whatever's family member to, like, see that, oh my gosh. I don't know how I'd be able to take that because I think there's a tendency for people to really take, and it's funny because I'll have, you know, I know so many people that get into politics and my first thing is, why?
Why?
Yeah. Like, are you serious? The pay sucks. And
the hours are often terrible.
Are awful.
Everybody thinks they're your boss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're going to tell you that they're your boss, too. Yeah. It's like, why? Like, we don't, we don't pay our politicians enough. I know people think, oh, they make so much money. It's like, okay, like...
In the private sector, they would make double.
Easily. Yeah. And they don't have the headaches. Like, you know, like, I see so much more corruption in business than I ever have in politics. Like, you don't... I can't imagine if, like, you had a newspaper reporter that had access to a company on a day-by-day basis. Like, the things that you'd uncover in a company versus things you uncover in the public sector, I think you'd be really surprised
at your own company.
Yeah. Happening. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially corporate America. I mean, my gosh, you know, there's no comparison. Like, some of the things that, you know, major corporations get away with today versus, you know, public servants. So, yeah.
I look at it also from a competitive standpoint. I was speaking once at a chamber luncheon, and I said, you know, everybody wants to criticize the politicians or the government, you know, state, federal, whatever, of how they're spending their money, mm-hmm. like, or how hard they're working.
Mm-hmm.
How hard are you working?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was a lunch full of about 200 people. And mm-hmm. I said, candidly, I cover a lot of youth sports. How many of you are working as hard as a JV basketball player?
Yeah.
And, you know, people were murmuring and whatever. And I'm like, I'm going to jump right to the end. I think it's 10% max.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 200 of you. 20 of you are working as hard as a JV basketball player. And he's not paid.
Mm-hmm.
We're all paid to mm-hmm. do this. And if there's only 20, the other 180 people, why are you even getting paid to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you double down and work harder? But even to the 10% that are actually doing it, you're still at the standard of a junior high basketball player hoping to be on the team, but he's 10th man down and he hardly ever plays. Look at how hard he works.
Yeah.
And I think, particularly in business, you got a responsibility to mm-hmm. step in there and do that. And you watch across all professions, you see it obviously in real estate, but how many people are sort of sticking the flag in the ground and praying?
Oh, a lot.
How many bankers do you see at a chamber lunch that are all like, hey, I'm going to give you a mm-hmm. new card, or mm-hmm. the insurance guy, or whatever it is, I'm going to give you a new card. What did you actually do at the lunch?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. It's, in politics too, like, I know we're kind of talking about the pay in politics. I don't mean to dive off into some of it, but if, you know, a lot of those politicians too, it's like, okay, what was the reason for getting in? You know, you've got, you know, especially nowadays, it's even getting worse. You know, you've got billionaires or, you know, multi-millionaires getting into politics. Well, is that really a good representation? Because, you know, we really need a lot of the, you know, blue collar people that get into politics, but they're not going to get into politics because the pay sucks.
Yeah. And because they're going to get their head ripped off.
Or like, where do they go? Like, okay, you get a, you know, congressman, for instance, that gets in there. All of a sudden, you know, they see these lobbyists, you know, well, how much is this lobbyist going to get paid? And now he's learned the system, you know, the exit plan. Yeah, the exit plan is to become a lobbyist. So, like, you know, how does that conflict? You know, you've got so many of these career politicians, especially in Congress, that, you know, get these campaign donations, do the right thing for that company. Well, wow, now they can work for the company. Like, all of a sudden, a few months later, it's like, okay, like, maybe we should, like, figure out, like, how to pay these politicians more, and maybe we should figure out, like, how to just basically cut them out from being able to do that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. It's an interesting time in our world.
How do you view being family member of an elected official? How do you view when you see him out in the public, either making comments or taking comments?
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, because it goes back to, like, having thick skin. You can't, like, take it too serious, because you catch people sometimes at their worst time, you know. So it's like with a cop, you know, you got somebody. The only people that are going to complain are the people that are angry. You know, you never get a reward. You know, it's not like you're going to get the guy to say, hey, mayor, great job on this. You know, I agree with you. You never go to, like, a mayor's night out, or you never go to, like, he goes to one of these
and
events.
And everybody just stands
like,
applause.
Yeah, like, great job. We came here to support this idea. It's like, no, they're just coming here to, like,
remonstrate.
So it's like, I mean, there's plenty of times where I, you know, and Tom will even admit it, like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking and saying it? But, I mean, hey, you know, we're all going to make mistakes in life. I can't tell you how many times I've said the wrong thing, sent the wrong email, called the wrong person at the wrong time, made the wrong comment, chose the wrong tenant. So there's so many times that you make a mistake. It's like, at the end of the day, he's, you know, he's doing an incredible job. He's done a great job for that city. So, you know, his heart's in the right place. He wants to, you know, do the right thing for the city of Hammond. So if that's his underlying mission, then, you know, the little micro results that happen because of that are insignificant.
And I think,
not always, but yeah.
But in general, yeah, they are insignificant. And I think people, particularly in Hammond, they want someone to fight for them.
Yeah.
They want somebody. And I don't think, you know, maybe Tom would have a tough time getting elected in Valpo.
Yeah.
But I don't think the Valpo mayor could ever get elected in Hammond. You got to be a lot tougher in that area. And I think he suits his constituents and mostly, I think people trust the authenticity.
Oh,
yeah. They say, okay, well, if he's going to be unfiltered, I'm probably going to hear the best and the worst, and I don't feel like it's all packaged.
No, for sure. He's definitely not a politician in that sense. You know, he's, and that, you know, that it goes back to, I think, an upbringing. It, you know, it's more of a leadership quality, right? It's not like, you know, there's the career politicians that are very polished. They say the right thing at the right time, every time. It's like, okay, do you really
trust
that guy?
You don't know what it actually means,
like,
but it's all the right
words. Yeah, it's always the right thing. He knows how to skate around and not really answer your question. So, or you have the guy like, you know, Tom is unfiltered because, you know, you ask him a question, you're going to get an answer, whether you agree with it or not. You know, he's not going to all of a sudden, you know, spin it into like, was I even talking about that?
Yeah. You know,
what was that? What was it? What question did I even ask him? Because how are we talking about this subject now? You know, so that's one. And I think that's a quality that, you know, I try to exemplify in work is, you know, I always try to tell people what I think and what my opinion is versus like sugarcoating or taking their, like the worst thing you can do sometimes, not all the time, but is to listen to the owner's opinion about how to sell the property or what to do. It's like, you got to trust in yourself. Like, okay, I know I've been in this business for over 20 years now. Like, this is your one and only property. I think I know a little bit more about like how to navigate a transaction or how to like, you know, how to structure this deal or what to do. So I think it goes to like being having the self-confidence to, you know, and the drive to know you're trying to do the right thing for the client.
And also knowing it's not an inflated sense of self-confidence. It's just, no, I've done the work. I actually know that. If someone will say something to me about what's transpiring online somewhere, and I'd be like, oh yeah, that person's in Michigan City. They just left that position and now they're moving over to, you know, LaPorte and they're doing this. And previously they're in, like, well, how do you know? Well, I just read all the time.
All the time.
I just read.
Yeah.
And you could know. Similarly, you know, hey, what is that area of Winfield doing to redevelop itself? And how is that different from Crown Point? And if you moved that out to Lowell, actually, you'd get this, but you would lose that.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, it helps do your homework.
Oh, yeah, especially in, you know, and I start off in the retail division. I was doing Walgreens and CVS stuff, and just to pick up on, like, traffic patterns, what side of the street to be on, like, you know, boundaries.
Ingress and egress,
you know, where do you want to be, you know, in the right, you know, what corner do you want to be on, you know, what are some, like, you know, knowing like a railroad track is a boundary, you know, as a mental boundary that people can't, state lines a mental boundary, like bridges are mental boundaries, like how you don't want to be positioned around those things, or like, okay, what side of the street is the morning side of the street, what side's the afternoon side of the street, what side do you need to be on, you know, it's,
yeah,
you know, who are your core competitors, what are their sales doing, like
if you're a bagel place that's going to sell things in the morning, you don't want to be on the afternoon side of the street, no matter how much traffic there is.
Even if there's nothing for sale on that side of the street, like, and that's a great thing about when I was doing CVS deals, is like there was never a corner for sale. It was me knocking on a door, you know, of, you know, in Hobart, I knocked on the door of, you know, I think she was 80, in her mid-80s, 90s years old, you know, having a conversation, basically saying, hey, I got a golden ticket right here. Like, I understand, like, this is, you know, and sometimes just having an honest conversation. Like, I understand, you know, you don't want to sell, but, like, you're never going to have this opportunity again because they're going to go somewhere else, you know, or they're not going to be here in a year. So, it's, I don't know, it's, there's so many little intricacies you learn through, like, through your career and through working with retailers or working with entrepreneurs or, you know, when I got my CCIM designation and just, you know, constantly learning. So you're always trying to learn. I'm even to this day, I'm looking at a CCIM class. I'm like, oh, that'd be a good thing to learn about. Like, even though like I don't do a whole lot of brokerage anymore. I, you know, cherry pick my clients and, you know, for the most part, I give them off to the guys in the office, but I still want to learn, you know, I still want to know how to do things better, you know, even if, you know, I'm just passing a small tidbit of knowledge on to my staff, it's still better than nothing.
And also, it's just good to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My wife will joke with me sometimes. She's like, why are you watching that show? Like, you don't do any of that stuff. I'm like, but why wouldn't it be just good to learn?
Yeah.
And like, I'll just be smarter. I don't know when I'll ever use it, but I might bring it up in conversation sometime. Mm-hmm. But I actually would just prefer to know more stuff.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm the same way. Just always pick it up on stuff. Like, it's entertaining. It's better than, you know, better than some of the other junk that's on TV.
If you're going to watch like Entertainment Tonight or you're going to watch like How It's Made, I'd prefer to watch How It's Made.
Yeah, I don't need people's opinions.
Yeah, exactly. I don't much prefer people's opinions.
Yeah, I agree.
I got a pretty defined opinion of my own. Yeah, I don't necessarily need a lot.
Yep, I agree.
How do you, maybe that's one of the ones I'll close with, but how do you balance being a leader that needs to have your own opinion and obviously the passion to push it through with the humility or empathy or whatever characteristic you want to describe that allows you to support them and not only direct them?
You know,
how do you balance all that?
Oh man, it's a good question. I don't know if I am balancing it properly sometimes, but
Maybe that's the first clue is being honest with.
Yeah, it is.
Sometimes I'm doing good. Sometimes I'm not so hot.
And they know. They know I don't know the right. You know, I mean, this is my first company I've ever started. So, you know, it's still a learning curve. We don't have like a set person necessarily in a set place that is like corporate America. We don't have like, okay, this is your defined list of responsibilities. Like, no, you've got to be able to like help us out in other aspects. It's like, you know, okay, sometimes you need to help with this and taking the bullet for the team sometimes and knowing like, okay, and that's part of being a leader, right? You have to like have that humility and know like it's not their fault if you didn't tell them what to do or if you told them the wrong thing to do, you know, and to recognize like if they made a mistake, well, if I didn't tell them what to do, like how could I expect them to have done the right, just the right thing, but done the thing correctly sometimes. So to have that humility and know like, okay, well, it's my fault at the end of the day. Like if I'm the leader, if I'm the captain of the ship, if the ship's not, you know, if the ship goes off course, well, it's not because I had the guy that's running the engine room make a mistake. It's because I didn't tell him what to do.
And ultimately, if I want to be the leader, if it goes off course, it's still my bad.
Yep.
Like I, you know, at the end of the day, you do have to own all the decisions everybody makes.
Yeah, it is my, at the end of the day.
The upside is you get to make those decisions, but you got to own them all.
Yeah, and that's the liability. That's part of being the, you know, the owner of the company, the managing broker, is that it's on me. Like it's my license. It's my like lack of something I didn't do, or, you know, I get to, you know, I share in the rewards. You know, it's, if they did the right thing, that's great. It's their, you know, their baby. If they made a mistake and I didn't tell them what to do, well, it's my fault, you know, too. So it's their fault too sometimes. But don't get me wrong. If I told them what to do and they didn't do it the right way, then it's their fault. But
then
you got
license to go after.
Yeah, yeah. You got to, you know, you got to keep them on their toes still, you know. And I think everyone's on their toes. You know, I'm definitely not afraid to speak my mind and to tell somebody when they messed up and explain, like, you know, they know that I've got their back no matter what. But they also know that I'm going to say, like, what were you thinking? Like, why did you do that? Like, there's no way we should have handled it that way. Like, you should have done this.
And the challenge sometimes is just they weren't thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you thought something differently than me, but you actually thought through it all and then went this direction, I'm way more comfortable than if you're like, oh, I don't know, I just really didn't think about it. I'm like, oh, no, we can't have that kind of...
You get emotional. Like,
you gotta think about it.
Yeah, and that's why it's nice to have, like, somebody... bounce ideas back. I mean, just this morning and yesterday, we have a very angry tenant. You know, we execute on the behalf of a landlord, right? So if we're getting in a dispute with a tenant and they're getting ticked off and they're making accusations and you're trading emails back and forth, I'm like, take a step back, yeah. understand from their perspective. They're upset because, you know, of XYZ, and they're upset at the landlord. They're not upset with you. They're upset with you because you're the messenger. It's yep. not you personally. It's nothing that you did. So just take a step back, let them vent, and then let the landlord make the decision. Just make sure that you understand you're the just the vehicle to help execute, you know, execute the owner's vision and to help mediate the situation. Because sometimes you have to do a lot of mediating to, like, that's half the job is mediation, to help try to figure out, you know, a path of least resistance, a path of compromise, a win-win situation, or lose-lose for that matter.
Yeah. Tell me about growing up in a traditional media world. Your dad's obviously got experience over mm-hmm. JOB.
Yeah.
You obviously, through politics and your own business, have paid attention to all the media around here and how it's evolved. How do you, as a business owner, you're on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, mm-hmm. Twitter,
yeah.
Facebook,
all of it. Yeah,
you know, your website, you're constantly figuring out how to do videos and reels and mm-hmm. all these other kind of things. There's probably plenty of people that grew up in a traditional media world that say, oh my God, I hate all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You either like it or you figure it out, we have to embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
But you communicate via all kinds of digital means mm-hmm. or all kinds of means, period.
Yeah.
Why'd you embrace that?
It's, you know, I think as part of our company, I'm a big techie.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I'm probably the techiest in the office. I'm the oldest and the one that knows the most about technology, which is very ironic. Is that you too? So, I love what you guys do here. It's very innovative. I love the idea of, like, happy, great news, because, you know, the traditional media, in my opinion, I mean, it's slowly dying. I don't think it's ever going to die, but, you know, I don't watch the news. I don't let
they're working
kids
hard
watch
at it, though.
Yeah, are they? They're,
no, I'm meaning they're working hard at killing.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, for sure. I mean, like, you know, take, you know, the Channel 5 news or Channel 7 news. Like, how, you know, I could listen to my police scanner and do the same reporting. It's like, it's so fake to me. You know, it's like they're slaves to their advertisers a lot of times. Like, have you ever heard, like, them criticize the Bears organization?
Yeah. No.
No, like the crappiest organization yeah. in all of sports. And then, like, how do you go from, like, talking about the fire or the tragedy, somebody got shot, to, like, oh, here's our puff piece now. Like, you're yep. all like, man, that's a tough transition. So it's easy to make that transition to, like, okay, is anybody really watching this? Like, you know, and the Times does a great job of keeping it local with, you know, with their stories. And I'm more of a local news guy, and I don't know. It's really easy to, like, I mean, there's just no interest in being, like, part of a national audience. And, you know, you get, you know, you establish your relationships, you know, you feel comfortable working with certain people, and you see what they do. And, you know, I guess I skipped around the answer of just being the kind of techie I am. It's like, you have to embrace certain technologies and the way that people are absorbing the news these days. Right. So, like, you know,
but there had to be somebody in commercial real estate that said, what the heck are you doing all yeah. this kind of stuff for? We do meetings and mm-hmm. lunches, and you take the guy for drinks and you give him a prospectus. What are you messing around on Instagram for?
Yeah, I think, you know what, I don't even know why. Sometimes. I've got a great girl in our office that handles all the marketing, and, you know, I pay attention to what other companies are doing. You know, you try to stay ahead of the curve. That's, like, the biggest thing I try to do with our company is, you got to stay ahead of what everyone else is doing, or, you know, try to, you know, you try to see what the big guys are doing and how they're doing things. And we're more nimble, or, you know, we can move a lot quicker. So it's easier to get in, you know, start doing things like Matterports, and, you know, do 3D renderings and drones yeah. and start to do videos. You see what others do nationally. I think that's a big thing, is I pay attention to what's happening nationally and how other people's marketing efforts are going. And, you know, I just absorb, like, what others are doing. You know, it's like just the same thing I pick up with entrepreneurs. You know, you pick up things what people are doing nationally, and you're like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, I love the way they're showing, you know, this property and how they're presenting it. So it's, you gotta be ready for the next generation and how they're gonna absorb the media. Otherwise, you know, what's the sense? You know, like I said, anyway, you can stick a sign in the yard, but how are you getting that next listing? How are you getting to the client quicker and faster and, you know, with less expense, you know? So
you're probably also thinking, hey, if I just go by what a commercial broker is doing in this particular space, you may be more advanced than they are already. And if that's the only standard you have, you're basically like, okay, well, I'm good.
Absolutely.
No, you're good relative.
Relative, yeah.
But, you know, we were just, it was mentioned earlier, we were out at NDU yesterday. Northwest Indiana doesn't have a TV station. So there's a different level. Those people compete out there or in Chicago or down in Indy when there's a TV market.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a much greater level of competition. Here, because it's not here, doesn't mean you don't have to strive for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to ultimately pick areas from someplace else and say, if I'm at the leading edge, how are we going to stay that way and put more distance behind us?
Well, that's a great point. Chicago, you know, is the population's growing, which means more money, more opportunities for realtors. So, like, am I, you know, was that, would I be ready if a big, one of the big three or five firm comes out here and plants its flag? You know, am I ready for like that kind of competition? And I would say we're, you know, way ahead of that curve. So it's not resting
on your laurels. Yeah,
absolutely.
Just thinking, well, hey, nobody does this in this region, so I don't need to. You're like, no, if they're doing it and it's actually effective,
We keep the competition out too, you know, at the same time. So we cooperate with a lot of the big firms up there because, you know, one, sometimes they don't want to drive, but B, because we're the, you know, one of the market leaders and we know the market better. And a lot of those guys do have, you know, they've got great ethics. Some of the guys that like the CBREs or JLLs that I've worked with in the past, they recognize, hey, I need a local expert down there. I'm not just going to like work, do the job just to do the job. They're really like trying to help work the deal for their client and do it in the right way. So
they've got the same kind of integrity that you have, so it makes a great fit. Where are we in this economic cycle?
I think we're definitely in a recession, which is, you know, like they say in CNBC all the time, you can't fight the Fed, right? So they've been saying it for months and months and months. They're getting what they want. Things are slowing down. I think next year is going to be a pretty, you know, first I'll talk nationally and then I'll talk, you know, our little microeconomy here. I think nationally is going to get a lot. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think this holiday season is going to be interesting to see how sales shake out for some of these nationals. I think we're just seeing how the closures are going to happen. You know, you look at some of the major office markets around the U.S., they have not got hit yet. You know, I know people are saying, oh, look, there's vacancy. No, like these Fortune 500 companies have lease agreements, you know, 3, 5, 10 years out. These things are really going to start, you know, you think about the COVID effect and work from home. You know, there's definitely been a shift back to in-office, but it's still mostly
dramatically less than it was.
So it's not gone away, but it's definitely a hybrid model. So now as these leases are rolling off in these major U.S. markets, they're not renewing, or they're renewing for 30-50% of the space they need. So that has not hit the market. It's not like, you know,
just because of COVID, everybody ripped up their lease and walked away.
You couldn't, you know, unless you're Elon Musk, you know, you don't just walk away from your lease agreement. So I think the impact of the office market's really going to be felt next year and the year after. In fact, I've been tracking some stocks that have major investments in some of the major markets, and you know, I'll get on our database to like look at what the occupancy is, and I'm like, oh man, you know, that's great that they're 90-some% occupied.
Yeah.
But you have an occupied building means that you have a fully occupied building paying rent. Doesn't mean that like
there's anybody they're in there.
So like when that lease rolls off, they're not getting renewed, or they're getting renewed a smaller square footage and then a smaller price. So we peaked a long time ago on some of these office properties. So there's going to be a major setback. There's going to be a lot of defaults on loans. There's going to be a lot of some of these office REITs that are going to get hit really hard. Retail's the same way. Some of these major retail REITs are going to get hit hard. How that impacts the overall economy is going to get hit pretty hard. Some of the, you know, bigger banks are impacted by them.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see some major impact nationally. Locally, we're great. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we've got low inventory. We've got, you know, we're the beneficiaries of Chicago, unfortunately. You know, what I predicted years ago when the office market started to slow down, they started to go the hybrid work model. You started seeing people, you know, before it was, you know, called the value hunters that moved out here. We've had more like yuppies that I know have moved out here for, you know, the same things that we talked about, the, you know, quality of life, the schools, the natural resources that we have. And they're still in Chicago. They're going to Chicago, you know, 2-3 days a week. But, you know, there's only so much you can work at home,
yeah.
You know, in my opinion, for the most part. So I thought what was going to happen is some of these, you know, these big, you know, let's just take an Uber, for example, as they went to a hybrid work model, which is what they're doing now, they'll shrink down that Chicago market, that Chicago office space in downtown. You know, if they shrunk it down by 50%, well, then they pop up little satellites all over the suburbs for their employees, or they go to these co-ops. I mean, that's great for us,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not good for downtown Chicago, but it's great for Northwest Indiana. And there's, you know, a lot of companies that are doing that, you know, especially from the work from home model too. You know, some of these workers want to be out. They have to be out.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been great. We've been, you know, we've got the mills are pumping out steel, the BP's pumping out gas, and we've got all these people from Chicago that are moving out here. So that, you know, all these homes growing means you got more insurance needs to get sold. It means more real estate that needs to get bought. It means you got more people that want to invest in their local financial advisor. So you've got all these, you know, more restaurants you need. So it's been great for us. You know, as the population grows, as businesses come out here, as you get more core jobs, it's been great. And we haven't been like that speculative market where, you know, with the exception of what they're doing on Mississippi.
Excess.
Yep, yeah. We don't really see the excess, but we never see the, like, the major downturn. So
yeah.
Like even during 2009, you know, to whenever the Great Recession ended, we never, you know, we weren't impacted as bad as, you know, you look at like a Phoenix, Arizona, you know, that kind of market. You know, they were building homes by the, you know, thousands a month. And then, you know, when that market crashes, it's crashing at 25, 30, 40% home values. Well, we don't see that kind because we're not building at the same level. So, and it happens with almost everything, you know, retail. We don't have a whole lot of speculative retail. We, you know, that industrial stuff that they built on Mississippi was probably the first time we've ever had since Becknell did the I-65 and 61st project. That was the first, that's the first major, major speculative industrial deals we've done. So, you know, remains to be seen how well they'll do, but it's a great, you know, it's a great product, great position, so.
I'll ask you one more question just because it's such a prominent property. Let's say the Whites call you and say, Aaron,
mm-hmm.
what are we gonna put it? 65 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell them?
Oh man, I can't give that up. I've got my ideas.
Okay.
It's a great site, obviously, just finally.
We're not going to break them here today.
No. I've got, yeah, not going to break any of my ideas for the site, but I think it's a great opportunity for Northwest Indiana. So we're excited to see what ends up happening there.
A lot of things ahead.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for sharing a little stories and insight in how you got where you're at, the thinking behind it, the kind of business you do. But thanks a heck of a lot for coming.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Thank you.
Sure.